The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
You can listen to it on Sirius XM Channel 80. What can't you do with it? You can sharpen knives with it. What else? Doing an infomercial. By the way, it's National French Fry Day. Who has the best fries? I have a don't at me type answer to this. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. But first, nerds, it's time for some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. So, I said on First Take, when the Team USA roster was first announced, this is the kind of roster that, if Team USA is going to lose, this is the type of roster that loses. Like, what's the pattern with Team USA? We you know, beat everyone's breaks off, right? And then we get tired of being the bully, and it's like, you know what? The very best players in the world also, it's like, yeah, we've played in the Olympics already. We got that feather in our cap. We've checked that off the bucket list, got an Olympic gold medal. We've proven our point. You know what? We'll send our second best players, our all third team USA basketball players, you know, that type of thing. And then all of a sudden we lose, or we don't win a gold, or we lose an exhibition, or something like that. Then we get mad, and we send our super squad again, and we crush everyone. We do that for a little while. And then right now, and by the way, part of it has to do with some superstars aging out. They've been in a bunch of Olympics. They don't have a lot of time left in the NBA. They'd like to preserve themselves. They've had a lot of commitments off the court because they become superstars over time. And the young guns are not quite ready. They're not quite like monopolizing all the slots in the top 10 best players in the world yet, right? So it's sort of in between time. That's where Team USA is right now. No LeBron, you know, James Harden, like here's the Team USA for real. And this team would never lose an exhibition. It doesn't matter how unserious they were. Steph, Harden, Kawhi, KD, LeBron. They couldn't lose by accident. Not a single game. Steph, Harden, Kawhi, KD, and LeBron could not lose a game if they tried. Like, just think of the Nets. The Nets are not as good as that, but the Nets had a hard time losing a game when they even had two of their guys healthy, right? Like, they didn't have all three of the big three healthy. They beat the Bucks so bad, I wanted them to stop the series after two games. If they had all three guys healthy, it would have been over, and like, they would have had to call it after three games. So Team USA, but you say, all right, look, Max, I understand. They shouldn't even lose an exhibition if that's the starting five, but that's not the starting five we send. That's not the roster we send. The roster we send has not only not five MVP caliber players, but not even five starting all-stars. We got like three starting all-stars and two reserve all-star types. And, you know, but hey, that should be enough to beat squads with maybe half a dozen NBA and or EuroLeague players, right? Three NBA rotation pieces or two rotation pieces, one NBA starter, and three EuroLeague players. Why is that enough to beat us in an exhibition, even if we're sending an all-star team? Even if it's not our first-rate all-star team? Well, the answer is this. Yesterday I was talking about, after the loss to Nigeria, how kind of broadly these other teams want it more. This is the biggest stage a lot of these players will ever play on, and this is the pinnacle of their basketball careers. That's not the case for any of our guys. The pinnacle of the basketball career for our guys is winning an NBA championship, to my understanding. Maybe, you know, if KD or someone like that thinks otherwise, they can correct me. But it's my understanding that the NBA championship's the highest level of basketball and would generally mean the most to our players. So you can't, like, you can't trick yourself into thinking that, in fact, an Olympic gold is even bigger. For our guys, mostly, it seems to me, it's a feather in their cap. That's different than, oh my God, this is it. This is the height of my basketball career. So the other team wants it more. And secondly, I brought up that when you have certain things that make it easier, like you move in the three-point line, now everyone's a little bit better of a three-point shooter. When rules make something easier, that favors the less talented team. So certain marginal things like that favor the international competition. But there's another point here that I didn't really get into yesterday as much. Imagine this. You have a team of three all-stars and two all-star alternates or whatever, bench players, right? They're not starting all-stars. You have that team on the one hand as a starting five, but they haven't played together, and they have a week of practice, let's say. And they're playing an NBA team, not the worst team in the league, but a team that didn't make the playoffs, but they've been playing together for a couple of years. And you just throw them on a court. Is it possible that the team that didn't make the playoffs but has been playing together for a few years beats the NBA, not super team, but like the, hey, they got three all-stars and two other guys who are sometimes all-stars? And yeah, it's possible because they've been playing together. Think about college ball. How many one-and-done style teams win the championship? Win March Madness, the whole thing, I mean. Not get to the Elite Eight, not get to the Final Four, win the whole thing. Occasionally, you'll have a Kentucky team where AD goes one and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist goes two, right? Like, you have the MVP level players one after another, and that team is so talented that they have to win. They can't not win, right? But usually, if you have just a one-and-done team of the super talented guys and they're playing a school with talent, like, they have guys who are going to make some NBA rotations, more than one of them, but they have upperclassmen. They've been playing together for 2, 3, 4 years. That team a lot of times is going to beat the more talented one-and-done team. What we have, Team USA, is the equivalent of one-and-dones. This is not like a multi-year commitment to Team USA where they're going to be playing with the same group of guys for 3, 4, 5 years. This is, hey, I want my turn to win a gold medal. But the teams they're playing against, who now have NBA and EuroLeague talent. Like, look at Thybulle's block of KD last night. He can do that in the NBA. Thybulle's a great defender. So it's not only that the talent has come up around the world, but these guys commit to their teams, play together, and we don't. And by the way, I'm not suggesting we should. I'm just explaining how it's possible that our team that's far more talented loses two exhibitions in a row. That's never happened before. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. You see what Popovich said to the reporter? People, this has been being reported that Popovich got testy with a reporter. But I'll let you listen to the sound, and you decide.
Let me also answer that question. You know, you asked the same sort of question, the same family of question last time, where you assume things that are not true. When you just mentioned, you know, blowing these teams out, that's never happened. So I don't know where you get that. Can I finish my statement? Are you going to let me finish my statement or not? So you'll be quiet now while I talk, and then I'll listen to you. When you make statements about in the past just blowing out these other teams, number one, you give no respect to the other teams. And I talked to you last time about the same thing. We've had very close games against 4 or 5 countries in all these tournaments. So the good teams do not get blown out. There are certain games that might happen in one of the tournaments, in the World Championship, the Olympics, where somebody gets blown out. But in general, nobody's blowing anybody out for the good teams. So when you make a statement like that, it's like you assume that's what's going on, and that's incorrect.
I think what happened there, by the way, I mean, Popovich can be a bully, and he's the coach of Team USA, and he's not having the success, by the way, that Mike Krzyzewski had. Of course, Mike Krzyzewski also had more talent on the team, but Popovich can be a bully with reporters the way Bill Parcells or Bill Belichick, you know, have been in the past. I'm not sure exactly that's what was happening. He was bullying the reporter a little bit early. Then the reporter stood up for himself, and then Popovich said, all right, you're going to, I'll finish talking, and then I will listen to you, okay? It seems to me the argument they were having, the reporter was saying, look, here's your average margin of victory. And Popovich is, they didn't actually get into the minutiae of it from what I heard, but what Popovich is saying, yeah, we do blow some teams out. Blowouts occur in every tournament, in every league, blowouts will occur. But what Popovich is saying is, by and large, good teams in international competition don't blow out other good teams. So he's challenging that assertion. And by the way, if you point to average point differential in wins, it's possible that some of those blowouts are occurring against bad teams, and that's padding the stats. That was Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Is the home run contest catching up to the dunk contest? Shohei Ohtani got bumped out. He didn't win. Pete Alonso won. But Ohtani hit some upper deck shots that even when you just look at it, eyeball test, you go, that one went 500 feet. And it did. It's not about so much to me watching the home run contest, a home run derby, is not so much about who wins it, how many home runs did they hit. I mean, that's fun. You're really looking for these moonshots, right? You're looking for the biggest, baddest dudes hitting these things a country mile. This dude, Ohtani, hit a couple in the upper deck that were reminiscent of the kind of home runs that McGuire and Sosa juiced version would hit in the home run derby, you know? Like, you see, these dudes are so big and strong nowadays, obviously including Ohtani. You see Aaron Judge hit a ball. Like, oh my God. What? And by the way, you don't need to be as big and strong as these guys to hit big home runs. Like, Mickey Mantle would hit 500-foot home runs. He weighed, 195 pounds. Reggie Jackson, 200 pounds, soaking wet. Hit the light tower in Detroit, right? 500-something feet away. And these guys are twice the size of those guys. And they're all concerned about, like, launch angle. So they've practiced their home run swing. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Jeff Darlington, ESPN, NFL insider, now joins me on the Goodyear Hotline. Jeff! I did what I'm not supposed to do. I'm not supposed to just shout out the guy's name, I've been told. It confuses them. Okay.
What are you supposed to do?
I'm supposed to be like, Jeff, and then I ask you a question. How are you? Thank you for joining me. What about Rodgers and
great.
The Packers? But I would just go, Jeff! And you're sitting there going, well, I don't know, what the hell is he asking me? Is that what's happening?
No, what's happening? I enjoy a moment of just absorption there. I like that. That was nice.
See, shut up, Rog. All right. Jeff Darlington, ESPN, NFL insider here on the Goodyear Hotline. Who blinks first, Jeff? The Packers or Aaron Rodgers?
I don't know that that's the way that I'm thinking of it, but I think it'll be Aaron Rodgers. Hmm. And I say I don't necessarily know that it's him blinking first. I think Aaron knows what he's going to do. He's too strategic, too smart, too thoughtful to be just kind of being like, I'm just going to not show up to camp and hope for the best. Like, right. Things are about to get expensive, Max. It's 50 grand a day, which I realize is not that big of a deal. He's already given up 600 grand in the offseason through his contract. Now it'll be 50 grand a day that he won't get back each day. That could be $1.75 million if he misses all of camp. So to me, I think he knows what he wants to do. I personally think he'll wind up playing for the Packers this year. But then again, I wouldn't put it past him to have something in mind that maybe the rest of us aren't thinking of yet.
Yeah. I've heard some things too, Jeff, about what maybe he has in mind that I can't repeat because I don't know if it's credible or not. It seems to me maybe he thinks he has a plan. But, Jeff, this is what's perplexing to me. I'm Aaron Rodgers, okay? I don't want to play for the Packers anymore. If I look and I think, well, if they really like Jordan Love, then they would rather surround him with minimum 3 first-round picks that they're going to get from me. It's going to be 3 first-round picks and stuff. Like, I would think for Aaron Rodgers, you can get 3 first-round picks, a good player, and maybe a third-round pick, like something crazy, right? And if I really like Jordan Love, let's do that. Let's get something for Rodgers and build a great team around. Now, if I don't like Jordan Love, if I think, he's not the guy for the job, then I want Rodgers to quarterback for me. But if Rodgers proves to me that he ain't going to do it, if he convinces me I'm just not going to play for you, then let me go get what I can for him. A serviceable quarterback, hopefully one better than Jordan Love, and my 3 first-round picks and stuff. Either way, to me it seems, if Rodgers convinces them I ain't playing for you, they will certainly deal him. And Jeff, they will deal him to who he dictates, because if he lets the other teams know I'm only interested in playing for this team, they're not going to give you 3 first-round picks for him. He's in the driver's seat if he has the will to do it. Why do you think that he doesn't?
Well, here's where that is all logical and all sorts of options that make sense. But here's the one thing that we've got to remember here. If Brian Gutekunst comes out
and ultimately the general manager of the Packers, and ultimately says, you know what? Jordan Love isn't ready, is not our starter. We are not that confident in him. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where I wonder if Aaron Rodgers is like, I dare you. I dare you. I dare you to go into this season with Jordan Love, the guy who created all of this. And Aaron can say what he wants, that this isn't about Jordan Love. Maybe it's not about the person, but it is about the pick.
Right.
And if the guy is not ready, a first-round pick who got to sit for an entire year is not ready to start the first week of the second season, then he never should have been picked in the first round to begin with. And that's
moved up to pick.
Is he willing to accept that? Is he willing to say, we got to bring in somebody else because we screwed this up so bad that the guy we picked with our first-round pick and caused this mess is not ready right now?
Oh, no, wait a minute. Did they move? Am I thinking of the Eagles moving up to pick, or did the Packers move up to pick Love?
The Packers moved up to get Love.
Yeah, Packers moved up.
They moved up to take the only skills position player that the Packers have taken in the first round since Aaron Rodgers has been with the team.
On offense.
And it happened to be Jordan Love.
Right, his replacement, his supposed replacement. If you do that, you must take a Hall of Famer. Like, the guy you pick has to be in the Hall of Fame one day.
And people tell me, when I make that argument about, like, he better be ready, second year, what other, when do you hear about a quarterback where it's, remember Jared Goff, but he was like 8 weeks into the season and hadn't gotten the field yet. And we were all like, this guy is an absolute bust. Like, people are freaking out. Jordan Love has had an entire year to get ready.
Yeah, for people who are like, it didn't used to be this way, understand the way natural selection works, right? There are pressures, your environment puts pressure on you, on groups, so that the individuals who succeed are best adapted to that environment. So if it takes a quarterback, they will miss in the NFL, some teams, on the type of quarterback who it's going to take 3 or 4 years to develop, like in the old days, right? Some of those guys are going to slip through the cracks. But the guys who succeed in today's NFL because of the clock ticking on the rookie contract are guys who will be able to play, start, within a year or so. If you can't
that's right. Yeah. And Max, also, people who say, like, well, Aaron Rodgers got several years to be ready. Aaron Rodgers would have been ready to start day one. Right. Like, he didn't need those years behind Brett Favre. He just got them. He would have been ready.
And it was a different time. By the way, the ESPN top 10 quarterback list, Jeff, I thought they got it right on the money. I think Justin Herbert's number 9 with a bullet. I think an interesting list would be who has the most value in a trade quarterback. I think Herbert's then already top 5.
Yeah.
But I like their list a lot. I don't know that I would quibble with actually any of the slot. I mean, you could argue that.
I got a couple.
I want to hear yours.
I got a couple. I got one that Matt Stafford – is Matt Stafford number 6 on the quarterback list if he's still in Detroit?
No.
Like, the guy was 15th in touchdowns, 16th in completion percentage. Five wins last season for the Lions?
No, the answer's no. You know the answer's no, and so do I. Everyone knows the answer. So now
we're projecting in that regard.
Yep,
Whereas you leave a guy off like Ryan Tannehill, who, by the way, I understand, he gets eye rolls. The guy has led the league in pass rating the past 2 years. Their offense leads the league in yards per game and yards per play.
Tannehill's a very good call. I've totally overlooked him. You're right. Tannehill. Wait, yeah, who was 10 on the list? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Who was 10 on the list? Do you recall?
Number 10? Was it Lamar? Was it Herbert?
Lamar was higher. Jackson, Herbert was 9. Stafford. I want to say Lamar was 8.
Dak was in there. Yeah, I can't remember.
Dak
was
7. Stafford was 6. It was Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady, Wilson. I thought that was right on the money.
Yeah.
Allen.
Yeah. Sure.
Stafford, that Dak. Works. I want to say Lamar, Herbert, and then I don't remember 10. But yeah. Ryan Tannehill was snubbed. That's true.
It's almost like the same thing over in the Pro Bowl. Like, he didn't end up in the Pro Bowl, and it was kind of like, whatever, things happen, especially the votes. It's almost like people just forget. Like, they literally like, oh, yeah, forgot about that one. You know? It's interesting.
It is, but, here's another way to look at it. Why don't I like them to win the Super Bowl? Because as much as I want to stump for Tannehill, and I have on the air, it really becomes an exercise. It's like in boxing when I think a guy's being overlooked, he's not getting a title shot. It's like an exercise in moral rectitude. Like, this guy deserves it. Max, do you think he's going to win? Well, no. And then sometimes he does win, but I don't really actually. So I say all that about Tannehill, but then in the end, if they had a better quarterback, I'd probably like him to win a Super Bowl. But they don't. You know, like that's...
It's tricky, yeah. Yeah, because you look at those 10 teams and
Kyler
you say,
Murray.
Which of those coaches...
Kyler Murray.
Yep. There you go, Kyler Murray. You look at those 10 teams and you say, which of those teams would give up their guy for Tannehill? And I don't know that a lot of them would, even though they probably should.
Yeah, but you're right about projection, Jeff. You're right about projection because we're projecting Stafford, we're projecting Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray was not better last year than Ryan Tannehill. But going into this year, given the trajectory of his ascension, we assume that he will be, right? Like, at least I do. I get
which
it.
Which is weird. But it's weird because then we should project that Joe Burrow should be in the top 10.
Maybe, except
like
he got
today,
hurt.
If Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert were coming out today, if we were redrafting right now, does Herbert go before Burrow?
Yes, without question. And I like Burrow a lot. But what Herbert has already demonstrated is that he, like, if Trevor Lawrence has the year coming up that Herbert just had, we'll say he's lived up to all the hype. Herbert was great. He was great.
True.
But you're right.
Burrow
is a super talented guy.
Before he got hurt.
He was not as good as Herbert. Do you think he was as good as Herbert before he got hurt?
Herbert was a monster. That's a tough one to dispute. Herbert was a monster last year.
Monster. But Burrow, I think also, look, inextricably, these things are tied to the quality of the team, right? Like, you know, if you look at the offensive line and you think that offensive line needs help and the skills position players aren't good enough in spite of who they just drafted at wideout, Ja'Marr Chase, then you tend to think, all right, even if I think take away all the variables, this guy is better than that guy, I'm emotionally not going to be feeling it after watching a season of this other guy playing behind a bad offensive line with no weapons. And so we just kind of come to a consensus list that reflects what we're going to be feeling about it, I think.
Yeah, that's right. No, I agree. I mean, it's a fun exercise in July, no doubt. You know, I get it. But it is a tricky one.
Jeff, before I let you go, where's the spot with the best fries? It's National French Fry Day.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I used to, God, you know, still pops in my head. I used to say Checkers. I used to go there all the time. But I haven't been there in probably 20 years.
Right, but 20 years ago, Checkers. Good. If it was National French Fry Day, you know, in 2001, the answer would be Checkers. Jeff, always love talking to you, brother.
Sam Bradford would be on my top 10 list, apparently, too, for quarterbacks.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Max.
This is the Max Kellerman Show, coming to you live from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. Did LeBron just suggest a way that he could possibly get on the Lakers Mount Rushmore? Is that even possible? Recent data shows that out of all female-owned businesses, it's estimated that 1 in 3 is owned by a mom. CEO and founder Talia Goldstein is one such mompreneur. She needs to hire several matchmakers a month for her personalized matchmaking company, so she uses ZipRecruiter. Their technology helps find the right people for her job quickly. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Kellerman. That's ZipRecruiter.com/KELLERMAN, Kellerman. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Also download the podcast. It's National French Fries Day. Who has the best fries? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I have a hot take on this one. I'll give you a little hint. Fries are like pizza. They need to be hot. The Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. LeBron says he wants to play 5 to 7 more years. Well, he said 4, 5, 6, 7 more years, whatever it may be, but he wants to retire a Laker. Now, here's the question. Is there anything LeBron can do to get on the Lakers' Mount Rushmore? You know, Mount Rushmore for some teams is an exercise in finding 4 guys worthy of enshrinement, right, or to be memorialized that way. For the Lakers, it's an editing exercise. Who do you leave off? Tough to leave some of these guys off. Like, Kobe and Magic are on. And I think Jerry West is on because he was one of the greatest players of all time and then arguably the greatest executive of all time in basketball. The logo, tough to leave him off, right? So that, are you going to put Wilt on? I don't think so. Wilt doesn't make it. By the time he was a Laker, he wasn't as good as he once was. And he didn't spend most of his career on the Lakers, and he won 1 championship in L.A. does obviously James Worthy and Pau Gasol, great players. They don't make it. Does Elgin Baylor? No championships. Not if you're a Laker, you ain't going to make it. Don't tell me about Mike and get out of here with that. Shaq? Does Shaq make it? Got three rings in L.A. Three-peat, three consecutive finals MVPs. Shaq doesn't make it onto the Lakers, Mount Rushmore. So can LeBron make it with one championship? I don't think so, because I mentioned Magic and Kobe and Jerry West. That leaves one spot. That's Kareem's right now. He's got five chips with the Lakers, several of them as the best player on earth. LeBron's got one chip with the Lakers. One full season as the best player on earth. Because that wasn't him last year. He was among them while he was healthy. He won the very best. And it wasn't him his first year with the Lakers. So it seems to me that LeBron's not even next in line to get on the Lakers Mount Rushmore. Next in line seems to me to be Shaquille O'Neal. So what does LeBron have to... LeBron not only has to bump Shaq, he then has to bump Kareem. Not going to be easy. But if he plays, let's say five more years, because he said, he mentioned four, five, six, seven. So let's take the lower end of what he said. Five more years with the Lakers. And let's say four of them, he remains an elite player. And then in that fifth year, he's not as what he, like he's clear, he's not an elite player anymore. And who knows how long he'd want to hang around after that, right? And let's say in those 5 years, he makes two finals and wins a championship. Let's say he wins a championship when he's not even an elite player anymore, right? He's not the best player on the team when he does. He doesn't bump Kareem. He don't even get past Shaq for the Lakers. LeBron would have to, in the next 5 years, win a minimum of two more championships as the best player in the world to get past Shaq. Still hasn't taken out Kareem. Now, it's not impossible for him to get on Mount Rushmore because you can't underestimate LeBron. If he plays another 7 years and wins three more titles as the best player in the world, because remember, Kareem won the best player in the world the last couple titles. But if so, if LeBron does that, I guess he would be on Mount Rushmore over Kareem. He'd have to play till he's 43 years old. Oh, it's so gangster with the Lakers. But we had this conversation, this debate on First Take. What LeBron would do, whether or not he made Mount Rushmore, if he even played five more years with the Lakers and won another championship, he'd go into the Hall of Fame as a Laker. He would be most remembered as a Laker, believe it or not, for several reasons. One, he will have played, if he plays five more years for the Lakers, he will have played twice as long for LA as for Miami. And if he wins at least one more championship, he will have won twice as many championships for LA than he did for Cleveland. And because being a Laker, it's like being a Yankee. Like Reggie Jackson started his career in Oakland, ended his career in Oakland, or at least with the Athletics. It was Kansas City Athletics his first year. Started his career with the Athletics, ended his career with the Athletics, played 10 years, nine of them in Oakland, won three consecutive World Series as the A's cleanup hitter, was an all-star, an MVP, everything for the A's, played only 5 years with the Yankees, only two World Series with the Yankees, went into the Hall of Fame as a Yankee. Like, if you're a Laker and you do a lot, that's what you're going to be known for, because like it or not, the Lakers are more important than every other franchise combined. That's one. Two, recency bias. Quick, who else did Wilt Chamberlain play for? Well, I don't know. I didn't grow up around Wilt Chamberlain. Right, but you remember he played for the Lakers, don't you? And eventually, people who didn't grow up watching LeBron will see the most recent footage of LeBron as a Laker. So I don't know if he ever makes Mount Rushmore, but I'll tell you this. If he plays another 5 years for the Lakers and wins at least one more championship, he's going to be remembered as a Laker primarily. Oh, that's got to gall people in Cleveland. Guests join me on the Goodyear Hotline, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Got a question? I got a question for you first. Where are the best fries? Because I got a hot take, a don't at me type take about that. Axe Max is next. 877 say ESPN. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive makes bundling easy and affordable. Get a multi-policy discount by combining your car, home, motorcycle, commercial, auto, and more. All your protection in one place. Bundle and save at progressive.com.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Got a question for me? 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Time for Axe Max.
Axe Max.
First, I will tell you the best fry spot. Okay, ready for this? This is a don't at me hot take. Or I guess you should at me here. 729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN.
Now, don't mess this up, Max.
Saying, prefacing it with this, fries need to be eaten hot. It's like pizza. Different experience, hot and cold. And the fry I'm about to tell you is miserable when it's cold. It is inedible when it's cold. But when it's hot, it's the most underrated fry. I'm talking about In-N-Out. In-N-Out fries, first of all, you can watch them cut the potato in front of you. And when they give it to you when it's hot, if you eat it right then, it tastes like the real food.
That's I like great. That. And guess what? In-N-Out, the bomb, you know that, and it's still affordable. I got still a sleeper affordable. For you. A great french fry, and it maybe been the last 10 years or so since I hear they changed the salt. Wendy's, dog.
See, I don't eat fries at Wendy's. Yeah. McDonald's is always the standard. They always had really good fries, but.
Well, let's see what the callers think.
Roland in Michigan, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. What's the best fry, Roland?
Well, I got to say, I was kind of disappointed in you saying In-N-Out.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically just glorified steak and shake fries, but I'll let it pass. I got to say, Arby's honestly has the best fries. Mm. The curliness of them, the flavor, they're always hot, not too gushy and not too crispy.
I can't even picture Arby's fries.
I will say the
Meat
Mountain
right
is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
The what is In-N-Out?
You said what is the Meat Mountain?
No. In-N-Out, I explained it. You have to eat them hot. I agree with this. When they're cold, they're among the worst fries. But when they're hot, they might be the best. That's my point. Arby's, I can't picture their fries even. I think all foods are oversalted. I don't want it too salty. I want it lightly salted. But the main thing is I like it when food tastes like the original thing. Mac in Los Angeles. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, so McDonald's is the undefeated champ, yeah, obviously. Carl's Jr.'s, when they had crinkle fries, were the best. Now Del Taco's taking that. But I'm not with you as far as pizza is good cold, man. Fries are garbage cold.
No, I don't like pizza cold. Listen, the show I'm on, First Take, used to be called Cold Pizza. I remember the executive who named it Cold Pizza. I was like, why'd you name it Cold Pizza? Oh, my kids love cold pizza. Cold pizza's disgusting. Richard in Manhattan, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, everyone's getting up in arms with the United States losing to Australia and Nigeria.
Yep.
First of all, they're not playing players that stayed in Nigeria or stayed in Australia their whole lives. These are NBA players who have heritage from these countries. We don't even know if these guys were born in those countries, which is okay, but they are NBA players.
Yes, any some of NBA them, not all of them. Richard, wait a minute. I'd say half the roster is either NBA or EuroLeague. Right,
okay.
And but if you're playing, if you take a roster that's not even good enough to be an NBA roster, and they play an all-star team, you'd expect the all-star team to win.
Not always, Max, because these guys may be playing together more than
exactly.
the all-star team.
That's
now,
what it is.
Let me tell you what I learned. Max, in 1976, we sent our best college ball players, Ernie Grunfeld, Scott May, Phil Ford, Kupchak, Lagarde. We played a Puerto Rican team. Now, the Puerto Rican team had college players, too, of Puerto Rican descent, mainly Butch Lee and Michael Vincennes, who were, they were very good ball players. Anyway, we outnumbered them with all-star college players, 10-2 at least. And you know what? Puerto Rico took the United States down to the final minute of the game, 98-94, one of the greatest college games I've ever seen, which shows you that if you get kids or players from equal talented pools, they're going to play.
Well,
you don't know who's going to win.
That's
Max.
What I'm saying, Richard, is – Richard always has a good call. What I'm saying is, and we're going to get to the next one in a second, that it's not equal talented. They are world class talented, but not talented like Team USA. The difference is they want it more and they've played together longer. That's the difference. But I think Richard was basically also saying that Buddha in the Bronx. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, you know, when you look at Chris Weidman, Conor McGregor recently, Wanderlei Silva, the list goes on and on and on. With Dana White, when do we start looking at him the same way we look at Don King? Might be a different type of exploitation, but, I mean, this guy has guys fighting way past their prime. Seems like he'd fight his grandmother if it was for money.
The UFC, actually, has, like, take the UFC's top five. Anyone in any division in the UFC in the top five would be champion in any other fight organization, any other promotional outfit. UFC has a monopoly on the best MMA talent in the world because they are the major leagues of MMA. And everything else is AAA or below. So, like, you know, the idea that in the UFC, you don't, in no organization do you always get the matchup you want. But there are no real soft touches in the UFC. Maybe you could find one guy where it's like, yeah, McGregor should beat Cowboy Cerrone at this point in Cowboy Cerrone's career and without too many problems. But you ain't going to find two guys like that in a row. It's hard. Pete in Long Island, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Yeah, Pete.
Hey, Max. Best French fries, I got to go on Long Island. All-American burger in Massapequa.
All right. All-American.
I don't know if you ever heard of it, but they got the French fresh fries, mm-hmm. Awesome French fries. So if you haven't been there, you got to check it out.
All-American Burger in Massapequa. Someone on my staff, write that down. Raj, get one of the interns to write that down immediately. Do I have time to sneak in an Aaron Rodgers call or not? Shimei in Connecticut, you have 20 seconds. Go.
Hey, Max, listen, do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to stay in Green Bay, or you think he's going to go to Denver?
I think if he sticks to his guns, he will absolutely be in Denver. I don't know at this moment if he'll stick to his guns. How worried should you be about Team USA right now? If you're a Team America basketball fan, Team USA, Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.